This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
You are listening live to a bar in Cumming, Georgia. It is Dukes and Bell, guys. We're at Buffalo's. Make some noise now here in the crowd. Look at this bar, man. Got a great crew, man. Look at Carl. It's just about 4 o'clock, and these people are already getting rocked.
Everybody's rich up here.
I tell you what, living by the lake, it's a good life. But we're hanging out here at Buffalo's. Be here till 7 o'clock. Come on down and join the party, pal.
Yeah, man. And we're having a good time. We will continue our conversation, obviously, about the Braves. You missed our conversation earlier in the show. One of our MLB Odyssey insiders stopped by, and he had an interesting perspective on the Braves, which got us into this conversation about, again, it's the why right now, right? We're frustrated. We're 0-7. We hadn't won a damn game. We're going, all right, how do we turn this around? What do we do? And now is what happens when you're losing. You know what happens when you're losing? You start pointing fingers.
Yes.
You start saying, who didn't do their job?
Who's to blame?
Who didn't spin properly? Who didn't get enough pitching? Who did? And that's what's going on right now, right? Granted, that's what we're doing.
Now, again, that's no joke. Guy, he was listening to us earlier in the 2 o'clock hour. Ronald hit us up at the text line. He goes, and now this is what I love about our younger audience, and we don't assume that everyone knows. Ronald is asking the question, Carl. He goes, when were the Braves in Boston?
Oh, wow.
Now, if you're – here's the thing, though. If you're like 24
– you wouldn't know that.
And you don't
– yeah, maybe not.
I don't know, use the internet. But the Braves came from Milwaukee, and from Milwaukee they came from Boston.
That's right.
And there was a huge – because people don't remember, when you ever hear the old days, remember like Mel Allen This Week in Baseball? Let's take a look at the senior circuit. That was the National League. The National League started in the 1870s. The American League started around the turn of the century. So the Yankees, the Red Sox, that's all younger. That's why they're called, the National League's called the senior circuit. So the Braves had a really big, rich tradition in Boston, but they were the Boston Braves, then to Milwaukee, then down here. But and now, so now, you, if nothing else, you learned something from Dukes and Bell. But the last time the Braves got off to this bad a start, batting, hitting, was 1942 with the Boston Braves.
Yeah, and I know we forget, too, is, you know, in 2016, we started 0-9. It seems like forever because we've been in the playoffs since 2018. But we were bad prior to 2018.
But that was rebuild time.
It was.
That was the last year of Turner Field.
Correct. And it was different because we weren't supposed to be any good, right? That was the deal. We weren't quite there. We were coming.
Expectations are low.
Yes, this is different. Expectations are high because we have built a team that should be competing. I was talking about Rob Bradford. You'll hear what he had to say coming up at 5:40 here. Grant's going to join us a little bit later on. But the Braves are front and center, guys, and rightfully so. We got to figure it out. We got to get right, and they play again tonight against those Dodgers.
Hey, one thing before we get to the dog report, because we got heated earlier. We were talking about the Braves, and we got off track about some of the things we brought up in our fourth and one. We were talking yesterday about Ryan Nuzil, just real quick. Nuzil getting kept as the center.
Sure.
And you and I said, you know, I don't remember Nuzil being a problem, but a lot of guys hit us up on the text line yesterday. We didn't get at the end of the show. Nuzil is kind of just okay. A lot of penalties. And as far as the ranking – now, I don't know how you feel about his run blocking. He's ranked 35th of 64th amongst interior linemen. Mm. And remember, guys, there's only 32 teams in the NFL to be the 35th guy. He's playing center. Pass blocking comes up at 35th as well. He overall ranks at 41st out of 64. So for guys who play the center position, some Falcon fans are saying, should you not talk? Was it David Andrews, the former Georgia Bulldog who was out there coming off an injury, only played a few games for the Patriots? Either way, they feel confident in Neusel, but I wanted to give those guys credit because I was kind of saying, I guess he's okay. They're saying, is he okay?
I think he's a better run blocker than pass blocker. As I said to one of our listeners, I'm aware of the PFF numbers. I would tell you the Falcons did 8 games of evaluation, and here's the thing for me. Listen, I'm big on the eye test. Was there a fall off in the run game, okay, when we instilled him into the starting lineup and installed him to the starting lineup, Mike, and Drew Dahlman was not in there? The answer is no. The passing game was always suspect because we were all focused on Cousins and his inability to move in the pocket, right?
Now, if you guys remember, Cousins would have 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi, and he wouldn't pull. Carl always says,
pull!
And he wouldn't get the ball out on time. And some of that was whether that was his legs or his knee or whatever, the Achilles.
Like the Raiders game.
The Raiders game was the
Raiders
perfect
game.
Example. He couldn't get the ball out on time. He was always like a half tick behind. It started in the Saints game. Remember everything was getting launched high?
Yes.
He was sailing all his throws. But that goes back to, you could argue that Cousins had a window before we get on McGarry. But McGarry's now, his role reverses because you got a left-hander. He does become the blind side.
So, listen, I'm not telling you he's the best thing since sliced bread, and he's certainly not the best center in the league. But for where we're at, Mike, and I think how they wanted to allocate these funds, they weren't willing to spend $20 million as Drew Dahlman. I think he got, 27 guaranteed, I believe, right, it was, or something of that nature, from the Bears. They just weren't willing to do that, and they felt like with the 8-game sample space that they got from Neusel last year, that they felt comfortable. But I hear you guys. I understand. We're going to see. Listen, I've said this. I'm not worried about the O-line. I'll be honest with you guys. That's not our issue. It's not. Our issue is getting to the quarterback, getting off the field, getting stops, secondary. Like, we got major issues in other areas that we've got to fix outside of the offensive line.
Look, I saw Michael Penix Jr. Yeah, he had a bad interception, but all rookies make mistakes. He had a bad interception against the Commanders, but he also did enough to win that game.
That's right.
And think about the game against Carolina where they do the what we used to call the high point toss, right, to Drake London, and they don't get it. They come right back to it.
That's right.
And that's something Matt and Julio could just, for whatever reason, never seem to get on the same page with. So I love his attitude. Look, we enjoy talking to Michael Penix Jr. You know me. My old beef was either one or the other, but now he's the guy, and we're just waiting for the other shoe to drop wherever Cousins goes.
All right, guys. It's Dukes and Bell. We're live incoming at Buffalo's Cafe. Right now, let's talk some dogs. So Kirby Smart was speaking about a bunch of things, and I just want you to hear a few of them, Mike. Yes, we know spring ball is going on. Yes, G-Day is approaching. But I think it's important to hear from the premier coach in college football, Mike, and his mindset as things move forward. You know, he's one of 3 active coaches that has a national championship, obviously. He's got back-to-back. Nobody has that. And so his influence goes a long way. And, Mike, he was asked about the changes going on in the future of the sport, specifically in college football. And this is something you brought up. I think it's kind of been out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
But it's the final approval hearing for the House versus NCAA settlement.
This is it. This is the final ruling you and I have been talking about. It was going to come down about now.
But it's Monday. All right? Next Monday, this is going to happen. And this could change college football significantly. So we'll see how the judge ultimately rules.
The way it was explained to us by guys who cover this for the business of sports,
sure,
it was going to be about a $25 million salary cap per team.
Per team.
In the big boy football.
What's that mean, though, day to day?
Right.
It also means that there will be roster limits. So these walk-ons that we talk about that make teams now and, hey, they got a shot, that goes away. Because you're not bringing those guys in.
No gray shirt, the old Saban thing, your wide receiver, your star. You know. But here's the thing. How much do you divvy up for that lineman that Georgia has been missing the last few years on both sides of the ball that really becomes that sort of secret sauce? Because now you really have to run it, and that's why you see guys like how Belichick has put his staff together in North Carolina with a former NFL executive to manage the cap.
So it's a $2.8 billion payout that would be paid out to college athletes, okay? So Kirby was asked about this, and I just want you to, you know, hear a little bit of what he had to say here on the show. As far as the first thing he talked about was this settlement and what it may mean.
You know, everybody's on pins and needles because we don't know exactly what's going to come out of this. What I do know is that we're going to continue to recruit people who love football, who are passionate about football, and that don't put money as the number one answer. Like, I've never met a really good player that's all they care about. So, like, the 105 number, the NIL number, what's the cap number, what is this going to be?
And he's saying, like, for us at Georgia, and listen, not everybody's going to operate this way. But I think for sustainable success, Mike, he's right. Like, I need to know, like, you know, you're coming in here asking me about the number. I'm coming in here asking about your passion for the game and if you want to get better and do you possibly want to play in right. the NFL one day. And if the answer to that is no, and all I care about is the 100 grand or whatever you think, the $4 million, you know, dollar evaluation that I think I'm worthy of, then you may not be the guy at Georgia. And that's what Kirby's saying about he doesn't care about this settlement. He's still going to approach this the same way, but it's going to change a lot.
Now, you can say that, but, I mean, Kirby may not be the guy saying that to the recruits.
Maybe not.
Your assistant coach, your position guys, you know, the guys who recruit some of these guys, maybe there's a little more moral flexibility with how this plays out. Because to say it's, I want guys that are passionate about the game. If you're here for dollars and cents, you're at the wrong program. Well, no, not necessarily.
And then you're saying they slip him into another room and a guy goes, I've got your money?
And now position coach X is going to explain how this works. I'm just saying.
No, you're not wrong.
And I love the fact that, you know, Nick Saban used to use his platform as a bully pulpit to say what's right or what's wrong, what he thought about college football. And Kirby has kind of inherited that mantle, right?
He has.
Kirby's now saying, look, I want guys who want to win. If you're here for money, I want money, but I want to win, but I want to get coached up by the right guys. Because Saban used to say, if you come here, Belichick's probably saying the same thing in Carolina. You come here, listen to the coaches, you're going to make the grades.
You're going to go to the league.
You're going to go to the league. But it's hard when you know now, guy who's number two on the depth chart can take his ball and scram. How can you be, unless we're going to get some kind of guardrails that say, you sign a contract with a school, this is what I think I'm waiting to see. You go to Georgia, you sign a four-year deal. If Alabama takes you from Georgia, Alabama owes Georgia compensation.
Okay.
So that's just the starting point. It's basically just like the pros. So if you're going to pilfer somebody in the transfer portal, there's got to be some degree of compensation. That's just one way to look at it. You get one chance to transfer in 4 years. Can we all agree that's okay?
But the things you're suggesting are not in
place. That's not in the books. But that's why I'm saying for Kirby to throw this out there, that's ballsy. Because it's going to be harder to implement this in the real world.
Until you get some guardrails. Here's Kirby talking about he knows what's coming with, does not know what's coming with NIL.
What I do know is that we're going to continue to recruit people who love football, who are passionate about football, and that don't put money as the number one answer. Like, I've never met a really good player that's all they cared about.
And that's part of the soundbite you just heard.
Right.
Mike, he also was talking about the unpredictability of what this settlement is going to mean with NIL. We're talking about Kirby Smart addressing some of the things that are going to happen. Next Monday is going to be a big day. It's going to be a normal day until this judgment comes down, and then you're going to see people freaking out around college football because it's going to change a lot. And so that's why Kirby's addressing this. One of the things, though, and this is to his point, Mike, he said on what's coming, meaning I don't know,
right.
but it could be legendary for college football. Listen to Kirby Smart.
It could be one of the most legendary, you know, moments in all of college sports with what's coming up on this ruling. And how people are going to try to manipulate a cap when all we're trying to do is make for competitive balance. And it's really unfortunate that I don't know if competitive balance is going to come out of it. You know, like, I don't know if the kids win in this model that we currently have, if they win long term.
Well, here's the thing. You have always provided free labor for a $1 billion industry.
Mm.
So we can all agree that the players deserve some compensation.
Yes.
But it's maybe they overcorrected to the point where even like guys like me, they're open-minded about this, go, wait a minute, this is getting a little too kooky. But I get where Kirby's going with this. I just felt that there was a simple fix. We've already missed that. The NCAA is responsible. They could have given a percentage of TV money. We'd never be down this road, right? Imagine you could have had walk-around money for everybody and we would have been fine. But now moving forward, okay, I will say this, and you and I have debated this for the last 11 years together. Anytime there's a major change in college football, the top 25 is still the top 25. Nothing changes. Nothing changes. Miami comes and goes. Florida State comes and goes. Alabama generally stays there. The Ohio State stay there. USC comes and goes. But the core of the top, even the top 40 is still the same. So that's why I think people feel like the world's going to swing off its axis. I disagree. The same teams are the same teams competing.
All right. So with a salary cap, will it be with competitive balance? Because that's what he's talking about.
Right.
So what?
Well, you got to manage your money.
So what we're saying is, unlike the old SEC, wink, wink, Auburn's not able to drop a bag on a kid's porch anymore, Mike, and have as much money as they want in there to make that kid want to come to Auburn. Sorry, Auburn fans.
Why are you picking on Auburn?
Now you have a number that you can't go past.
Right.
And what this becomes is, how good is your head coach and your general manager in college football now to manage your cap and to sign the right kids? Because if you sign the wrong kids with that number, you can't go over it. Auburn can't go over it. Alabama can't go over it. That's not the old SEC. If we wanted to spend more money at our school, Mike, to cheat, right, let's just keep it real, we did. You can't, if this ruling happens, you can't do that anymore. Now what does it come down to?
Well, it comes back. This is where you can see the Super 75 or your Super 50, because this brings the NCAA back into play. Who are the cops on this? Who's going to hand out the speeding tickets? Who's going to say you're keeping your team under the $25 million cap?
You need someone to police.
Well, the
this.
NCAA is going to be there until eventually here's what's going to happen. I'll tell you right now. The SEC and the Big Ten are going to tell the NCAA to go pound sand, and they're going to start their own thing. And that will be your college football championship.
Who's policing it?
The NCAA. Right now, who's going, me, ooh, me, Mr. Cotter. The NCAA wants to jump into that void. And nobody wants the NCAA doing the crap they've pulled. Jeremy Pruitt has got a lawsuit saying, how do I get a show cause? Well, I just did something that 12 months later is now legal.
Legal, yeah. Well, right. Ask Bruce Pearl. I mean, seriously.
Right.
Calvin Sampson's in the Final Four. Calvin Sampson got in trouble and got fired for
over
making
text
phone
messages.
Calls.
Right. Text messages.
Think about that.
Right.
All right. We'll see. I think Kirby's right, though, when it comes to how it could fundamentally change college football. We'll see if it does. Hey, we got a lot more to get to here on the show, guys. Coming up, we are going to talk more about Arthur Blank. As we said, Steve Wyche, our buddy from NFL Network, sat down with him yesterday at the NFL owners' meetings, had a great conversation with him. We're going to let you hear part of that here on the show. But when we come back, Braves are over. What's going on? Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Every single time we take a break, we're running into people we know. And I got to give a big shout out to Jersey Mike's mom. For those of you who are familiar with our radio station, Jersey Mike was our on-site engineer before Slim. And he is now in New York pursuing his dreams. But he was with us, and we'd always give a big shout out. And his parents would show up. And his mom is down here for a convention. They live in Jersey. And so she came by to say hello. And I'm just blown away because to see her, I was like, where's Mike? What's going on?
So Jersey Mike's mom basically just came all the way up 400 to see us.
To see
and
us.
They're the sweetest people.
They
and
are.
They used to give us these care packages. Thank you so much for taking care of Mike. And your son, you raised him well. And we love him. We miss him.
Yes, we
but,
do.
But thanks so much to Jersey Mike's mom for coming up.
Yes. Appreciate you. And Mike, we miss you. I know we gotta catch up. But that was awesome. So that was our last break. And that was in between catching up with everybody at the bar who is drinking like they've never drank before.
I mean, they're drinking like the Russians in the room next door.
They are drinking like they've never drank before. This bartender is going to be rich when she leaves tonight.
Look at Jackie. Now, by the way, Jackie's got a Philly shirt. Normally, we would not accept that, but she's okay. But we do have some Philadelphia people. I guess we can – well, they're not going back. No one's going back
to
Philadelphia.
Whoa. Who's from Philly?
Well, the guy wearing the friggin' Harper jersey.
Oh, get him out of here.
And by the way, that's the city. I will give him credit. He's wearing that city edition that you never see anyone wear.
You don't
wear.
See anybody wear. No.
So I'm sure that was $19.99 on MLB.com.
You know, you've got a lot of stone, sir, coming in here with that jersey
on. I got to tell you. And I will say this. Ever since Harper punked Arcia, Carl, we've not been the same.
Well, Mike, let's talk about it. Because as we've been talking about today, and listen, this is beyond water cooler or Facebook conversation, TikTok, whatever social media you might be on. Everybody in Atlanta is going, what is happening with the Braves right now?
It's historically awful.
It's historically awful. And the main reason is, and I think we can agree on this,
right,
we're not hitting, okay? We are used to our team at least hitting, scoring runs consistently. We may blow a save. We may blow a bullpen opportunity, Mike. Maybe starting pitching doesn't hold up. But go look at the last few games. What are we scoring? 0-1-0.
Right.
14 strikeouts, 0. What is going on with this offense is the question.
Yeah, and remember, guys, Seitzer got fired after last year. 2 years prior, I keep mentioning, he was the architect, if you want to give him credit, of the most dynamic Braves offense in history. And then apparently he forgot what he was doing last year. Now we get Hires in here, who's been,
Tim
by the
Hires.
Way, great resume. He's part of the Rangers. He's been everywhere he's been. There's been success. But right now, there's nothing Brian Snicker can do than roll out his lineup. He can move guys around, but everybody, when you look at the numbers, the only guy batting over 200 is Marcell Ozuna, Austin Riley. Albies batting 118.
Guys, you're counting on.
I mean, so it's, yes, I get it. Not every team in Major League Baseball got to start their season with San Diego and the Dodgers, who are, like, amazing in their own right.
Well, they're both undefeated.
Right. So if you want to say, get back to Atlanta, get some home cooking. But here's the thing. If we come back and lose two out of three to the Marlins.
That's a problem.
See, that's where you get to the point where 0-7. Okay, last time they were 0-7, there were no expectations. You pointed out earlier, that was, what, 2016?
16, yep.
They were still at Turner Field downtown. Now we're supposed to be one of the top five teams in baseball. Hell, every swinging journalist in baseball had us as the number two team behind the Dodgers, over the Yankees, over the Red Sox, over the Mets, over
the
Phillies.
They did. They did. And I think part of this is, again, you start the season, and Mike, again, you don't know what affects a team, and I don't want to say again.
Do you think that the whole Jerks at Profar thing they knew that? But here's the thing, what's their investment with him?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, he's their boy for a couple of weeks out of spring training.
I'm not going to tell you.
And they might know him in the league.
Yeah, I don't know if they're besties. I just think that it's, again, something that kind of threw off. You know, you got thrown off kilter, right?
The vibe.
Yes. You're moving here. My hand is moving in one direction. And then all of a sudden, you know, Snit had to come in there and go, hey, by the way, guys. Because, you know, most of these guys are – they're not that in tune. They might have seen it on their phone, maybe some of them. But as a team, you have to address this. And so, you know, somebody had to deliver that message. And I'm sure Snit was like, look, you know, he'll be back into June. But in the meantime, we got work to do. And everybody's got to do their part. And everybody's like, whoa, on top of all this other crap that we're dealing with right now here this is.
Right.
And I told you this the other day. It's not like they have to answer questions for the rest of the season. But this week?
They're getting questions.
This week they are.
And did you know he was using? Did you think his numbers were inflated last year?
You know, because everybody wants to know. Right. Yeah, everybody wants to know. And so,
I mean, not that David O'Brien or Mark Bowman's asking those questions, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, and being on the road doesn't help.
No.
Because, you know, again, the opposing team's media and the national media, Braves get as much national media coverage, guys, as any team in Major League Baseball. So I'm not making excuses. Our team's good enough to win. As I said to Mike in our argument earlier, pitching sucks, and we're just not that good right now. And hopefully over the course of 152 games, that's going to change. And that's all I can hope for. And, you know, with what Alex is going to do to try to correct this from a personnel standpoint, once we get to the trade deadline, and if we are viable, I do think he will be active. You guys know as much as I do. When has he not been active at the trade deadline? Even with moves that we went, what the hell is he doing?
Well, I mean, but this goes back to, we had a very heated discussion. You can rewind it, guys, all the way in the Odyssey app. Go get that app on your phone. Listen to it in your car, by the way. It's easy. But we were talking about, and my beef was just not spending money like we should be spending money. And Carl was saying, well, look, we have increased spending, but now things have kind of changed as far as, you know, just getting into the top five now would be a big increase of almost $85 million over our present payroll. So it just kind of jumps exponentially. The thing that I've always maintained is Alex is given a salary cap. He doesn't cop to it. He's not going to call out his bosses. But Braves
He's given a number not to go over.
Braves holding. You know what I think? And it drives me crazy. Some guys will hit me on Twitter and they'll go, yeah, he probably gets a bonus for keeping it under budget. I mean, are you out of your freaking minds? Prove that. Show me that contract from Braves Holding Inc. I just think that I just have a feeling. My spidey sense is the management, the ownership. Remember, guys, Liberty Media, for those who don't remember, I know I'm going to get wonkish for a minute. They spun off Formula One to its own stock.
They did.
And they spun off the Braves. Braves Holding Inc. But the biggest shareholders are all the board of directors from Liberty Media. Maffey, Malone, all these guys are the biggest shareholders. So guys like you and me have a small piece. It's infinitesimal.
Correct.
But I mean,
it's a great word, by the way.
So they're basically still controlling the purse ring. You're telling me the management of Braves Holding Inc. is going to spend beyond what the guys who own Liberty Media tell them to spend? Who own the stock? That's not going to happen. So I just feel we're in this paradox where we expect to compete, but yet we put limits on our team, which we know exists, but no one cops to.
And because of what Mike's saying, this part I do believe, we don't have one face.
No.
We don't have one face, meaning one owner that we go – for example, okay, not to bring him into this argument, but the owner of our Atlanta Hawks, right? We have one guy, Tony Ressler, who we know owns the Hawks. He's at games. We see him. We know what he looks like. And we, if we want to, can fuss it at Ressler and say, we don't think you're doing enough. We say that about the Braves. Who are we pointing the finger at?
Right.
Who are we saying that directly to? And that's why it's not an argument that's directly based at Alex Anthopoulos. He's our general manager. He's brilliant. I'm telling you guys, I've been around a lot of GMs in my life.
Right.
He's good. He does a hell of a job with having less resources, believe it or not, to Mike's point, about going out and finding these gems. Nobody wanted Chris Sale. Nobody. Look what happened.
Right. But here's the thing. That's the argument I was getting into the other day with a guy who said I was being too mean about Grant Holmes. You've got to go get a Grant Holmes who's been 10 years in the minors. You've got to hope that A.J. Smith-Sharp is finally going to show up. You've got to go after – think about it. Ronaldo Lopez was a relief pitcher that you bet on could become a starter. Yeah, and he did until now he's blown his arm out. And it's, by the way, it's exploratory surgery. It's arthroscopic surgery. I don't know when we're going to see him back. We're not orthopedists.
We don't know.
But it just comes back to you had to basically come up with a unique situation or a way to resolve your pitching, and now it's blown up because you don't get to go pay big money. Just go get a proven piece. If you wanted to keep Max Fried, see, it's not the slam dunk, and you brought this up earlier. Max Fried's had an injury history, so he's not the outlier. I would go with some of the other frontline starters that were available that we okay. didn't sign.
Yeah.
And not Fried.
And by the way, Fried got paid. I mean, it was 8 years, $218 million from the Yankees.
Right.
Were you comfortable as a Braves fan doing that? You can tell me, yeah, now that we're in trouble, but you weren't. So sometimes you've got to move on from these guys and say, that's not the deal. And by the way, to sign a 33- or 34-year-old pitcher, Mike, we've seen what happens there. That's the other part of this. When you start committing that kind of money that's guaranteed for 4, 5, 6 years to a 33-, 34-year-old pitcher,
good luck. You know, and one of the things that's funny, how I know it's, as you said, everyone's kind of grasping for different straws here, but it came up yesterday in the argument with our audience. I've been in a discussion, a lot of guys on social media. You look at Matt Olson. Matt Olson is a solid 250 hitter. And 2 years ago, he was great. The whole team was just amazing.
Yeah.
But he goes through some awesome, terrible cold streaks.
Slumps.
He just goes through slumps that are just brutal, like we've never seen. And then you get back to the argument like, okay, Freddie may have been disengaged with his agent, wasn't aware of what was going on. But would you give Sean Murphy guaranteed money. You give Olson a big deal. Why couldn't we have given Freddie Freeman a 6 friggin' year? You know, in hindsight, and then whether Ronald Acuna or Ozzy, I'm not picking on the Latin players, but they don't seem to really vibe with Freddie. But when you got a guy in the clubhouse that shows you what's what,
yeah,
maybe that's the kind of element you need when the chips are down. Only time will tell.
Only time will tell. We got to find a way to get in the win column, man. Dodgers are still in front of us right now. They come home for the home opener. We're going to be at Murph's on Friday hanging out. All right, Mike, what do we got coming up in Guy Talk?
Hey, man, if you're a guy who loves movies, don't you just love some of the most iconic roles played by Val Kilmer? We lost Val Kilmer. We'll talk about his movie career coming up. Also coming up, I've got a story about a Florida man.
A Florida man?
Dressed up as Ronald McDonald and a Florida woman involving Spirit Airlines. You can only guess. Coming up next, Guy Talk live from Buffalo's Cafe here in Cumming, Georgia. Just had a guy ask me, how do you guys plan the shows? Well, we meet around 11 o'clock, do a conference call. We talk about it. We're here at Buffalo's Cafe in a Cumming. And a Chris, guy just asked me, how do you plan your shows? I said, well, we know we're on a commercial break. We generally come back around 40. Okay, and we're back. So we really had to sprint back. So apologize for the delay, Chris. And Oren back at the ranch. But we got a great crowd here at Buffalo's Cafe, as we mentioned, in Cumming. Meeting some great listeners, guys, from all the way over in Dawson County. Some guys coming all the way from Cartersville. Some great folks coming over to say hi, hanging out with us. Hey, man. Got the news this morning. You know, you wake up. I don't know how you do it, brother. I generally grab the phone off the nightstand and see what the hell's going on in the world. And I saw that I knew he'd been dealing with cancer for so many years. Part of the reason he didn't have a speaking part had to use like that little the Stephen Hawking thing on the latest Top Gun 2.
Yeah,
was Val Kilmer, and Maverick was talking about Val Kilmer. Of course, played Iceman, became an admiral by that point. And the story point, Tom Cruise on social media saying that he was a great friend. Articles came out that Tom was very emotional shooting that scene because he knew how banged up he was.
In real life. Yeah.
And thus succumbed, unfortunately, to pneumonia, but has been battling cancer. But Val Kilmer, right off the top of my head, and I mean, there's so many great iconic roles. And I thought one of the cooler ones that I saw as far as tributes that came out today was from Kurt Russell, his co-star in Tombstone.
Love that movie.
Who said that, you know, some guys said that Val was difficult. He says, no, Val just wanted to get it right. Mm. And Kurt said that as a guy who's had to produce and direct movies, I want to get it right too. He goes, I had nothing but a great experience on the set of Tombstone. And they said one of the things that on Kurt Russell movies, they like to give gifts to some of the fellow actors. So as a joke, and now in hindsight, it's kind of morbid but fun, Kurt gave him, he bought him a cemetery plot in Tombstone. And then Val bought a piece of real estate overlooking Boot Hill, where all those famous gunslingers and stars of the Wild West with those, one, you know, those sort of like limerick sayings on their funeral tombstones. They are in Tombstone. But anyway,
that's cool.
Kurt Russell talked about it, but off the top of my head, Real Genius was a great movie. And again, if you're of a certain age, you remember that one as a comedy. Then you go to certainly his role in Top Gun as Iceman. He's only on the screen for 10 minutes and 45 seconds.
That's crazy.
Isn't that wild?
You know, look, we love this movie. I recently rewatched it from start to finish because it's been out for so long.
Right.
But a guy sent this to me earlier this morning, and it's that scene from Heat. And from an action standpoint, listen, right, we're spoiled now. Think about when Heat came out, okay?
Michael Mann, we love Michael Mann movies.
And this particular scene now, we've seen so much action and craziness and trucks flying all over the place. But that shootout scene in Heat, Mike, it's top standard. Like, it is excellent. And Val Kilmer was so good in that movie. But he sent that to me, and I was like, man, you start thinking about the roles. And the thing is, he jumped off the screen at you. Every movie, like, there wasn't a movie I left when Val Kilmer was in that. Right. Every time I left, I went, oh, hey, Val Kilmer was in that.
Val Kilmer is amazing in that. And when they're doing the shootout in the streets of L.A., I saw something this morning that said that one of our branch of our special forces, I don't know if it's Delta Force, whoever, says they use this. They basically show some of that video to show, here's the proper way to reload, because he was so authentic in everything he did. Yes, he was a method actor, but that's what would drive some directors crazy. Remember, guys, you had that first Batman, the first two that were directed by Tim Burton.
That's right.
Then you had Val Kilmer as Batman, and you know, everyone said, yeah, that Batman wasn't that good, until you got the George Clooney Batman.
Which
and you realize, wow, Val Kilmer was pretty good. But I just think, you know, from Willow, some of the amazing movies he's done. One of my favorite Val Kilmer movies, we have a lot of guys in our crowd here. You ever seen the movie Spartan?
I did not.
Okay, so look this up on your, if you could find this on your, maybe on Netflix or wherever you find your movies. It's a David Mamet written, he wrote and directed it. And basically, he is a former Marine working with some Delta Force guys. And basically, the president's daughter gets kidnapped, but they want to keep it under wraps.
Okay.
And he's got to basically find her. It's a movie called Spartan. Came out in 2004. Val Kilmer. I love that movie. Another one, Thunderheart. Plays, he's an FBI agent on an Indian reservation. Which, anyway, I'll just give you some of the more obscure ones, but you mentioned it. Everybody knows the scene from Heat. Everybody knows Top Gun. So, and I loved him as Jim Morrison in The Doors. There was an article that came out today in Variety.
He did a great job with that role.
Meg Tilly, you know, remember Meg Tilly?
Yes.
She said that all the actresses, and there was a big crowd auditioning in Los Angeles. He rolls up, screeches to a halt, gets out of the car, blaring The Doors. He comes into the audition, no shirt on, leather pants, barefoot. They basically said every other actor that was going for Jim Morrison just walked out.
Walked out. He killed.
That knew that Val Kilmer was going to get the gig.
Yeah. He was really talented, man, and only 65.
Yeah, that's way too young, man.
No doubt.
Especially when you and I think about where we are right now.
Only 65.
But yeah, but you mentioned Heat, and that's a secondary role, but he's holding his own with De Niro in those scenes, right?
Yeah.
When he wakes up at Neil McCauley's house, when you get around to getting some furniture, you know what I mean? Things like that. I love it.
Yeah, man. I love the small tidbits that actors are sharing about their experience with him. And to see him at the end, Mike, like you said, you know, not being able to really communicate the way he wanted to, that's certainly sad, man. But
the number one role.
An incredible actor.
You and I talked about this earlier with a couple of guys here at the bar. How many guys, if you're maybe it's 10 minutes in, 15 minutes in, who's not going to sit through Tombstone when you come across it, even if it's on commercial TV?
To me, that's my favorite role, or at least one of my favorite movies to watch, and that's one that I can watch over and over, too. You know, we always talk about you just flipping around and Tombstone's on. I'm going to stop and watch it.
And just loving that role, the fact that, you know, he's basically, he said in an interview, basically Doc Holliday is a nihilist, but yet he's going to enjoy the however many months or years he's got left on the planet. The vibe, that scene where I'll be your Huckleberry. I mean, who doesn't quote that movie, man?
It's
just gold.
And And he was a bad A in that movie too. He just was.
I've not yet begun to defile myself. Gold, man. Hey, a couple of things for you. Would you like to hear the latest Jameis Winston soundbite?
Sure.
Oren, have you got the Giants press conference? Oh, he can't find it. In a nutshell,
what is
Jameis
that?
Being Jameis, we're in New York. It's a big city, biggest city in the world.
Thank you, Jameis.
Well, biggest city in America. I'm paraphrasing Jameis, but he went on to say that we should be laughing, enjoying ourselves, not struggling.
Well, he's at the wrong team. He's with the wrong team.
Yeah, enjoy that quarterback room with Russell Wilson. I'm sure that's going to be a laugh a minute.
Yeah.
Especially if they draft Shedeur Sanders.
But you know what?
Room.
He's the guy that's going to try to keep everybody loose, Mike.
Right.
And by the way, Russ has said he's quarterback one in that situation.
Yes, he has.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. All right, man. Let's get to our first Florida woman story. This involves another Spirit airline passenger acting up at the terminal. Now, we saw the video of the battle royal that occurred at Hartsfield. I want to say it's Terminal D, Gate D. You see that one a few weeks ago?
Yeah, it was nuts.
Bodies are flying. Well, a woman at
that was the brawl, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
This time, it's a woman at Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport. She stripped down mid-argument with another man in a head-turning moment in a viral video filmed by a bystander and shared widely on social media. The topless woman, wearing only white underpants, black shoes, and shiny hoop earrings, was seen pacing around Spirit Airlines Gate G12. As seen in the clip, the woman seemed to be arguing with the man who attempted to return the clothes she had taken off. Then security shows up. A police officer stood beside the man, handing now the bare-breasted woman a black T-shirt, which eventually she put on. Travelers waiting in the gate seemed to avert their eyes. Don't look. It's like staring at the sun. We're not talking about Naomi Campbell with her top off, okay, or Cindy Crawford. Travelers waiting in the gate, basically trying to make a point to not look at it. Well, meanwhile, of course, what happens in 2025? Everybody's got their camera phones out, and they're otherwise we wouldn't have the video of this. Meanwhile, Spirit Airlines did not comment when asked for a comment by the Miami Herald.
Wow. Mike, can it get any crazier? Like, what's going on?
Well, I mean, you and I have had this discussion, and again, we don't want to sound like Gran Torino, get off my lawn, but there's like just a lack of common sense.
There is.
Now, most times with the airport, look, for some people, if you don't fly very often, it can be stressful. How many times when you and I go to trips together and there's always the family, the young couple with the toddler and maybe a young baby, and there's the stroller, and the mother's like, I told you to pack, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, so people are already like amped up.
On edge.
You've got, you know, people are just nervous about making their flight. They don't know. It says we got to take a train to a gate T. I don't know. So you get it. Some folks who aren't regular business travelers. And then, of course, on top of that, you always have the obligatory TSA guy, take your shoes off. Belts off.
Yeah.
You know, so that doesn't like ratchet up the tension. Then you throw the people that decide, I've got a connecting flight. I've got an hour to kill. Let's have six vodka sodas, which I'm guessing happened here in this Spirit Airlines
situation. I think so.
All right. On to a Florida man, and you'll enjoy this one.
Apparently, well, you had me at Florida man.
Wild body cam footage shows a Florida man being busted while dressed as Ronald McDonald, telling cops after a scuffle, I'm a clown, man!
Duh.
Christopher Marlowe, he's age 40, was dressed as a McDonald's character in bright yellow, red and white costume, and a big red nose, and he was wrestled to the ground and arrested for trespassing at a shopping center last week by Palm Bay Police Department. Palm Bay, I believe, is north of Tampa.
Yeah.
As he was put in the back of a police cruiser, Marlowe was told by one of the arresting officers, man, you look like a clown. No blank! I am a clown, stupid! According to the...
Does this guy really think he's a clown?
According to the bizarreness of the arrest, the police department added clown noises to the footage of the video. Womp womp. What do you call someone who returns to a shopping plaza after they've been trespassed? A clown, the department quipped in the video caption. Marlowe was charged with trespassing and felony resisting an officer with simple assault. He was booked into Brevard County Jail, CBS 12 reported. He remained behind bars on Wednesday. He was, here's the kicker, Carl, previously arrested for possession of meth and drug paraphernalia in November.
Oh, yeah, well, meth, no wonder.
That's a hell of a drug.
Yeah. Now look, the fact that he's dressed up as Ronald McDonald, that's that part alone right there.
That's a cue right there. Also today,
I am a clown.
I just what do you think? But dressed like Bozo, or were you dressed like Ronald McDonald? And by the way, you know, they don't even have Ronald McDonald anymore.
No, I know.
Kids get scared, get creeped out by it.
You don't like clowns, right? No, or do you?
But did you, were you ever really a – did Ronald McDonald affect you?
No, never.
I mean,
never.
I always knew there was a payoff. If I saw Ronald McDonald, I was going to get a cheeseburger.
Well, yes. I was always weirded out by the feet, though. They had those big shoes.
Oh, yeah, the big shoes.
The
you're
big
right.
shoes were weird. But, yeah, clowns don't scare me. I know clowns scare a lot
As
of people.
As a child, did they wig you out?
Clowns?
Yeah.
No, but I did
circus?
See that movie a few years ago. What was it? It?
It, yeah.
Yeah, and that, you know, that scared a lot of people.
That wrecked it for everybody.
Yeah.
That's
and people true. People dressed up with Halloween, you know, costumes and whatnot, too, as that character. So,
right.
Yeah, anything coming out of the sewer, I'm not down with.
Hey, man, we're live at Buffalo's Cafe here in Cumming, Georgia. As more audience members are rolling in, appreciate you guys coming by. All right, one last story for you. And this goes back to, we talked about this, I think it was last week. Look, we stay in our lane on our show. We don't talk politics. Needless to say, more Tesla people are getting difficulties. Guys are keying cars. But people are starting to realize now they've got cameras. There's cameras. Now, in some cases, I guess Teslas have cameras on the rear view.
Yes.
So you can see the idiot doing the stuff
whatever,
on
it. Whatever's going
Did
on.
Did you see the video that dropped last night of a guy? I want to say it's Palm Springs, California, where a guy walks up on a guy scratching his Tesla with a key. And he goes in the trunk of the Tesla pickup and pulls out a shotgun.
No.
This dude is running down the – I mean, this guy is running for his life. And you, I can't say it on the radio, but he's like, yeah, you're a big blanking man now, aren't you? And then the police showed up, didn't obviously charge the man who owns the Tesla for brandishing a weapon because they felt, like we said, like the Wild West, don't mess with a man's horse, don't mess with another man's vehicle. As John Travolta said in Pulp Fiction.
Listen, I've seen more about this over the last, I don't know, 3 weeks, Mike.
Right.
Than we've seen probably ever. And I know, like, I saw some story, too, where they're setting them on fire. Have you seen this?
Yeah. Somebody's got arrested trying to throw a Molotov cocktail at one.
It's ridiculous.
The problem is you've got people who don't know how to make a fire, people who don't know how to use a shift, an automatic transmission. These are not the people trying to make a homemade Molotov cocktail.
Yeah, exactly.
It's only going to end poorly. One last nugget for you. I guess it's the vice president of ratings or the vice president of LIV Golf. Pretty funny. Now, we talk about people trying to manipulate numbers and try to pump up the numbers. He said that LIV Golf had the best ratings they've had. Said it was something like 12 million people watched LIV worldwide. Well, I don't know about worldwide. 12,000 people are watching LIV Golf on average in the top 10 markets in America.
That's
last
week. How is this still existing?
I mean, you're not even getting like six figures of ratings.
Well, I mean, I know how because I know who supports it. But, I mean, like seriously, that's not even a product that should be on television, Mike.
Well, a lot of folks are saying, and I mentioned this to you yesterday, we finally get to the Masters, guys. Certainly we have a few – this is the last tournament for folks who have lost eligibility to be automatically grandfathered in with their exemption for the Masters. So it'll be interesting to see what happens this week. But, yeah, man, looking forward to seeing Bryson DeChambeau. Apparently the Masters on Masters.org, if I read this correctly, is going to be offering some of the practice. So you'll get to see DeChambeau
– Practice rounds?
Yeah. Practice or on the practice tee.
Practice tee,
so
okay.
So you can see all these guys, you know, just doing what they do.
No, that's cool. I can't wait for the Masters. As a matter of fact, we're going to be out there in Augusta. We're going to tell you more about that here coming up on the show. By the way, guy just hit me up. He goes, that clown story had me crying in the car.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm a clown, man. Guy goes, by the way, thanks to Strange Names on Twitter. He goes, thank goodness Mike had his heart procedure before his exchange with Carl. If you missed it, we got really hot
you
on the Braves
what?
Argument.
That would have been bad.
Yes. Imagine. No, I would say this. It would make the news, though. But
that's
radio,
true.
Radio host drops dead during argument.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, when I get a plaque here at the bar.
He lived well.
Yes.
Hey, man, coming up, you're going to hear Steve Weiss talk with our owner, Arthur Blank. He sat down with him yesterday at the NFL annual meetings. What did Blank have to say about Cousins and more? Steve Weiss is a friend of the show. You'll hear all of that and more coming up next.